I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, in advance of Super Bowl Sunday, it's a gridiron edition of Midday on Sports. Will the experience of football's favorite old man, Tom Brady, prevail over the prodigious offense of the Los Angeles Rams and their young QB phenom, Jared Goff? And when the annual orgy of ads and halftime extravaganzas is over, the NFL and all the organizations that comprise the feeder system for the pros will confront a new challenge. They can't buy insurance to cover serious injuries. What will that mean for the game moving forward? Mark Hyman and Stan the Fan Charles join me. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Stephen Sondheim's Company at Baltimore's Still Point Theater. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us on this chilly, chilly day. You know, if you know somebody in your neighborhood who's living alone, check up on him, check up on her, make sure folks are okay. This is a very, very cold day. It's going to get a little bit better in the next couple of days, but let's take care of each other. Make sure that people who may not have heat have some options of places to go where they do have heat. Today, it's Midday on Sports, the Gridiron Edition. The Super Bowl is on Sunday. We thought it a good time to talk about the state of the NFL, particularly the league's evolving response to the prevalence of serious head injuries and the problems that the NFL and organizations like the Pop Warner Youth League are having, finding insurance companies who are willing to write policies that cover serious injuries. Mark Hyman is a professor in the sports management program at George Washington University and the author of books about sports injuries, the latest of which is called Concussions and Our Kids. Good to see you, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
Stan Charles, known far and wide as Stan the Fan, joins us as well. He is the proprietor of Pressbox Digital Network, including the site devoted to all things Baltimore sports, PressboxOnline.com. Stan, good to see you, sir.
Thank you for having me, Tom, and it's great to see Mr. Hyman.
Indeed, it is always great to see both of you. And ladies and gentlemen in the audience, you are welcome to join us with your thoughts on the NFL, on the Ravens, on the Super Bowl, and all things football. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And thanks to the huge super football fan, Jemila Krempel, we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page as she shakes her head in the negative. So Mark Hyman, ESPN, Outside the Lines, has a report that they published 2 weeks ago that says the fact that the NFL no longer has general liability insurance that covers head trauma. This is according to multiple sources in their story. And there are people who are saying this could be a death knell for professional football, but it's not just the NFL that's having trouble covering head trauma. It goes down the food chain as well, doesn't it?
It's an important story, and I think one of the things that gives it, you know, weight and credibility is the author of the authors of the piece that you're referring to in ESPN.com, the Fainaroo brothers, who are wonderful investigative reporters and wrote an amazing book called League of Denial about the head trauma crisis in the NFL. In the piece that you're referring to, that they're speaking about the situation where insurance companies are now reluctant to insure football as a sport at any level. So the NFL is having difficulty in getting the kind of insurance that they need to protect themselves. But it's a much more, I think, urgent problem with respect to high school football and youth football, where, though the future of football at the youth level is very much endangered by insurance companies having these doubts.
Yeah, in the piece they say that this is potentially catastrophic for organizations like rec departments and youth leagues and even school districts. And they note a couple. There's one in Maricopa County in Arizona, junior colleges, one of which won a junior college championship in recent years. They no longer have a football program because it was just too expensive to insure it. So this really does seem like a real and present danger.
Well, you know, the trend lines for participation in youth football have been going down for some time. So this may accelerate the participation crisis in youth football. But there's so much kind of noise and concern about protecting kids and tackle football. There's been, you know, considerable research. Look, let me just back up for a second. There are two components to this. There's a concussion crisis, and parents very concerned about their kids getting concussions playing football. And that can be mitigated and has been mitigated to an extent by there's now a law in every state that addresses sports and concussion protocols and education and training and, you know, when kids can return after they have had a concussion to play. That's one aspect of this problem. I think the problem that's more intractable is this issue of subconcussive hits, hits that aren't concussions, aren't recognized as concussions, but over a long period of time can have, you know, a very damaging effect to kids. We're learning a lot more about that. And I think, you know, with respect to participation going down, it reflects concerns that parents increasingly have about exposing their kids over a long period of time to these subconcussive slams in the head and what the long-term impact is on their kids.
And Stan Charles, what's your take on how the NFL has responded to the prevalence of CTE injuries, these brain injuries that so many former players have suffered? There's $1 billion, rumored to be $1 billion settlement that they're currently arguing about in the courts to compensate those former players. How do you think the NFL has responded to that particular controversy? And Lord knows it's not the only controversy they've had recently.
Well, Mark alluded to the name of the book, League of Denial. I mean, they have been fighting this image problem that they've had, and it's more than an image problem, but they've been fighting it by saying all along, they almost come off like the tobacco companies that were saying that, you know, smoking didn't cause, cancer or something like that. This is a very, very serious problem. The answers are not real easy. I think the league has finally taken some appropriate steps within what they can do, about having doctors on hand that are not obligated to the team that they work for. They're league doctors. The concussion protocols have improved a great deal. But, you know, and I know you wanted to talk about this issue. One of the issues that I think the league has been really culpable in, and all of football, as a matter of fact, is this obesity.
Yeah, the New York Times had a piece about that a while ago.
I think it's really,
that's a whole other thing,
it's
too.
It's not sexy like CTE is right now, and that's a misnomer to call that sexy. But this obesity problem, if you think about kids that play football at the high school level, they're told, well, if you want to go to the next level, you got to bulk up and put on weight. Then you get to the college level and you got to bulk up and put on more weight. And then if you get to the NFL level, they still want you to add on more weight. But then if you blow out your knee, which your percentage chances are far greater if you're heavier, nobody's there to help you take the weight off. And there's a major obesity problem within the National Football League.
Yeah, and when it comes to insuring against this kind of thing, Mark, it's not just football. I mean, it's hockey and soccer. People are concentrating on football, but hockey and soccer have the same challenges. And, you know, it's in the air that there's an awful lot of parents who are simply forbidding their children to play football. I mean, Barack Obama, when he was the president, said, you know, he has girls who aren't interested in playing football, but if he had sons, he wouldn't let them.
Well, you're right to point out hockey and soccer as sports in which the incidence of concussion at the youth level is quite high. But there's a very important distinction between football, soccer, and hockey, particularly at the youth level. And that is, in hockey and soccer, there are one or two parts of the game, activities in the game, that result in concussion. In hockey, it's body checking. In soccer, it's heading the ball. Now, they're not the only activities that result in concussion, but if you take those things out at the youth level, or you modify them in some way, you can greatly reduce the risk of concussion. Football is very different in that respect because the whole game is basically
every play, you're at risk. Yeah.
There is a way to modify football, and it's something that we should talk about, and that is, what about flag football? Last year, there were more kids playing flag football, youth kids between 6 and 12, more kids playing flag football than tackle football for the first time. So you can see parents beginning to pivot, understanding that Football is a game they want their kids participating in. It's a great physical sport, you know, where kids, you know, run around and get a lot of their energy out. But tackle football is not an appropriate. It's inherently too dangerous for kids.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's the fact that we are obsessed as a nation with the National Football League. And how many people will watch the game Sunday, Mark?
Over a million.
Over
100 million.
Right.
A million in our neighborhood.
It really ends up saying something a little uglier than we'd like to admit about ourselves, that we're not that far removed from the Romans and the Lions, you know, throwing the Romans to the Lions.
They quote the guy who runs Pop Warner saying that they still have insurance for Pop Warner, but their rates went up 27%. I wonder, I know nothing about insurance, and I don't know if you guys do, but, you know, is this a matter of the insurers won't insure the NFL, or is it that the NFL simply won't pay the premiums that the insurance companies would charge to cover serious head injuries?
Well, I think, to be clear, the insurance companies are happy to take the NFL's money to insure against all injuries except for the head injuries that we're talking about. And one of the reasons for that is because the exposure to head trauma over many years results in injuries that don't manifest, that you don't necessarily recognize for 10, 15, 20 years down the road. So with respect to the insurance companies, they're signing on for exposure for claims that may not even be, you know, they may not even know about for 15 or 20 years. So head injuries are, you know, expose insurance companies to a level of liability that is off the charts. And I think that's what you're seeing.
And Stan,
in response to.
Stan, the insurance will not be on the minds of viewers or players, perhaps, on Sunday.
Or gamblers.
Sunday evening, or gamblers. Yeah, exactly. But there's kind of a sad irony that this incredibly blown call in the NFC Championship game, one of the three aspects of the pass interference that should have been called was a helmet-to-helmet contact. Commissioner Goodell said the other day that the thought that the suggestion that they replay the game or somehow replay it from that point in the game
right
until the end would cost the league $100 million. Do you have any idea how that is?
No, I don't have any idea how that is, and I also don't have any idea how that call could have gotten blown. But I will tell you that equally, I mean, there's such a subjectivity to decisions about referees' mistakes. I mean, for example, the play that ended up being vitally important to the Kansas City Chiefs was a roughing the passer call on Tom Brady, which in some ways I found more egregious than the missed interference call against the Rams.
Because they touched him.
They touched him. I mean, that call was absolutely ridiculous, and I didn't hear any, you know, pomp and circumstance surrounding that call. I have an old adage, you know, after watching sports for an awful long time, is that those calls tend to even out for both teams involved in any game.
Stan and I have been in press boxes for a thousand years, and I mean, how many calls have we disputed? Calls have we seen over the? It could have gone the other way, affected the outcome of the game. I mean, talk about the ultimate slippery slope. Imagine rescheduling, replaying a game because of a bad call.
I mean, is the best solution then to? I mean, did either coach have an option to, you know, throw a red flag and ask for a review at the time?
No, they did not have the option. That is not a missed call under the current video replay rules is not really challengeable.
So will
that's
that change?
I think that will change right by next year.
I think that's going to be the response to this crazy situation. But replaying the game, I don't think
has it ever happened before? I can't.
No. And there's a reason, because it's a horrible idea.
Yeah.
The
best solution would be then to allow plays like that to be challengeable.
Yeah.
Yes. The closest we'd ever come to that was, didn't the famous George Brett incident with the pine tar, where the umpire called him out after he hit a home run in the ninth inning against, they ended up replaying that from the point in time that occurred, I believe.
Yeah, but that's baseball.
That's baseball.
Football.
Different
yeah, interesting.
Ball game.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, we'll talk more about all this when we come back. Mark Hyman is a professor of sports marketing at George Washington University, and he's the author of Concussions and Our Kids. Stan Charles, known as Stan the Fan, is the founder and publisher of Pressbox, a great source for all things Baltimore sports from high school to the pros. We will be back after a quick break. You're welcome to join us to talk football, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR. You can follow me on Twitter, for which I would be eternally grateful, @TomHallWIPR. You can also ping us on the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll take a look at some of the big local and national stories of the week, perhaps. But we're also, I think, going to be able to talk to state's attorney here in Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby. She has made a somewhat controversial decision to stop prosecuting people for marijuana possession. The interim police chief, Gary Tuggle, has said that the police will continue to arrest people for possessing marijuana. But Ms. Mosby says that the folks in her office will no longer prosecute those folks. So city state's attorney Marilyn Mosby will be my guest here on Midday. We also are going to pay tribute to our good friend Gilbert Sandler, Baltimore's iconic raconteur. Gil passed away last month. He would have turned 96 years old on Super Bowl Sunday, and we will remember our good friend tomorrow here on the program. If you've just joined us today, it's a gridiron edition of Midday on Sports. My guests are Mark Hyman, a former sports writer for the Baltimore Sun, who teaches in the sports marketing program at George Washington University, and Stan the Fan Charles, the founder and publisher of Pressbox. We're talking football in advance of the Super Bowl, the prospects for the Ravens as coach John Harbaugh begins a new four-year contract. They've got a new general manager. They've got all sorts of cool stuff going on down there. So we'll talk about that. You are welcome to talk about it with us, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. To drop us a tweet, it's @MiddayWYPR, and you can join us on the WYPR Facebook page. So before we talk about the Ravens, let's talk a little bit about the game on Sunday. We've got one of the great old men of the game, Tom Brady, 41 years old. He's 17 years old, older than the opposing quarterback, Jared Goff from Los Angeles. The New England Patriots, Stan, have been to this rodeo before a whole lot of times. Do you think they have the edge?
Well, you know, the perception is that they do have the edge, and the odds makers have installed them. And initially, the Rams, moments after the Patriots defeated the Chiefs, I think the Rams were installed as the initial favorite at like a point and a half favorite over the Patriots. But quickly, the smart New England Boston money came in, and the Patriots have been 2.5-point favorites. Look, clearly...
But that says that they expect it to be close.
Exactly. And the fact that the Rams, who have played so poorly in the later part of November into mid-December, the fact that they were that bad then and they're only perceived as a 2.5-point underdog to the Patriots leads me to believe that I think the Patriots are in for a hell of a game on Sunday. I think it's going to be a tremendous game.
I think it's a good game for people who are getting on in years. Gladys Knight is going to sing the national anthem. I know Miss Knight is a little bit. We are acquaintances, and she's no spring chicken. She'd be the first person to tell you that. So that's nice to hear.
Are the Pips coming as well?
I don't think Gladys Knight goes anywhere without the Pips.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think she does that. I think that's in her contract. She's not allowed.
I heard there is a prop bet involving Gladys Knight as to whether, and I understand if you like wanted to bet $1 million that she would not take a knee, you would win $100,000. It's like a 1-10 bet that somehow there's a prop bet that it says, will Gladys Knight take a knee or not?
So she'd sing it kneeling down.
Well, somehow pay respect to those that have kneeled before.
Well, of course, CBS and other networks have avoided this controversy by no longer broadcasting the national anthem, but they're certainly going to broadcast it.
So to me, this is the great mystery. Of course, the game is in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And what is Gladys Knight's, one of her greatest, biggest hits?
Midnight Train.
To Georgia. So how is she going to, sing that in place of the national anthem? Or is that going to be a halftime?
It could be very interesting.
All right. We are getting into some severe speculation here. So, Mark, what do you think? I mean, he's 41 years old. He's still a really good quarterback. He and Mr. Belichick, Mr. Personality there, you know, have an amazing record. I mean, they are virtually always in the Super Bowl. I think, what is it, 9 out of the last 18, they've been in it.
Well, 41 doesn't sound that old to me or to anyone in the studio at the moment. Interestingly, Tom Brady is 8 years older than the coach of the Los Angeles Rams, Sean McVay.
Who's 33, right?
So when do you think the last time that happened was?
That's a good one.
I think, you know, we're watching the twilight of one of the greatest careers in NFL history. And I think that, you know, as you watch that game, you should think about, is this the last Tom Brady Super Bowl? I'm going to say it is.
Is it the last Tom Brady game? If he wins the game, does he go out in a blaze of glory and say, I retire?
He's many times said that he expects to be playing into his 50s. So if this is the last game, it's not going to be a voluntary retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still playing at a very high level, and there's no reason he can't continue to play. But I don't think, Stan, what do you think? He's not the quarterback that he was even 2 or 3 years ago.
No, he's slowed down a little bit. But this is a guy who puts in the requisite hours of watching game film. And if you want to really break down—
And working out. He's a disciplined guy.
He's a tremendous disciplined guy. I've said about Joe Flacco, our esteemed quarterback here in Baltimore, that his biggest crime is being too normal. Joe Flacco liked to leave the facility out in Owings Mills at 5 or 6 o'clock and go home and spend family time, whereas Tom Brady is there watching film until the cows come home. And I think that he's not a real normal person. In fact, Robert Kraft said he's open to a contract extension with Tom Brady, even at the age of 41. So I don't think this is going to be his last game unless he would really get beaten into submission by the Rams, and they've got the right duo with the Ndamukong Suh and what's the other guy, the gigantic defensive lineman who's arguably the best one in the league right now.
But you know, we talk about longevity. Bill Belichick, I think this is his 17th season as coach of the Patriots. He's the longest tenured coach in the NFL, and John Harbaugh. Trent, you know, our segue to John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh is in the top four, but the top three in terms of longevity coaches, Belichick, Mike Tomlin, and Sean Payton, all with Hall of Fame quarterbacks leading their teams. John Harbaugh, quite different. I mean, John Harbaugh has not had a Hall of Fame quarterback yet. He's been the Ravens coach for, 10, 11 years?
He did inherit. He had the benefit, though, of inheriting a defense that at one time had Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Haloti Ngata, and Terrell Suggs, which was pretty darn special.
Yeah, and as all us dads say, defense wins game. We got a comment on Facebook from Morgan who says, go Patriots. If they can control the Rams' defensive line, they will win the ground game. So he's not even worried, or he or she, I'm sorry, I don't know what gender Morgan identifies with, says that it's going to be a close game, but the Pats will win it. Adam Vinatieri, the kicker for the Colts, is like 46 or 47. He's been in even more Super Bowls than Tom Brady. So, you know, people can do stuff that they didn't used to be able to do back in the day. So I think I hope it'll be a good game. Sometimes Super Bowls are busts, but there have been some very good close games. I mean, I was one of those people rooting for an L.A.-Kansas City Super Bowl because that game they had in the middle of the season, the highlights of which
53-52.
I mean, that's a lot of points, and I like lots of points. I do not like the defenses may win ball games, but I don't want to see defense. I want to see points. You know, I like touchdowns. So we'll see. But you know, Jared Goff, he's also done a really good job with Los Angeles. I mean, he's the quarterback there. He's a young guy, and who knows? I mean, it'll be fun. Television ratings. Mark Hyman. They're up for the NFL. They have been down in the last few years, but they're up about 5% from 2017 to 18. There were 30 million people who tuned in on Thanksgiving Day to watch Washington and Dallas play. That's a lot of people, and a whole lot of people tuned into the both championship games, the AFC and the NFC.
So last year, there was a lot of hand-wringing about, has the NFL really alienated its fan base, you know, with all the discussion around head trauma and, you know, player conduct and misconduct, and are fans finally turned off by the NFL? And I think we have our answer this year, which is they really like football. They really like the NFL. So the ratings have bounced back. The game on Sunday, as we discussed, almost certain to draw an audience of 100 million people. And there is no other television program in history, you know, or during
that
the year
delivers that size audience.
Exactly. Yeah. So as a result, the revenue, the advertising revenue that the NFL or the CBS, which is broadcasting the game, 32nd spots this year, Stan. I don't know, maybe Pressbox would be interested. $5.25 million for a 32nd spot.
We've already bought two 30s. Yeah, two 30s.
That's well, correct. You know, but as I understand it, even as expensive as those ads are, at least as of a few years ago, CBS or Fox or ABC, who's ever broadcasting the game, never expected to recoup what it costs them to get the license for the game from the advertising revenue of that game. They still lose money on that, but the reason it's a good investment for them to bid for the Super Bowl or, you know, take it when it comes around to their turn is that they advertise their shows for the coming season. So you're going to see a lot of ads for CBS sitcoms and stuff coming up through the rest of the season, and they sell the ads to those shows based on the audience that they can generate from, you know, advertising it in the Super Bowl. It's an amazing, that's a complicated algorithm.
And they always seem to have a new show, and the new show after this is James Corden. What's his name? James Corden. Yeah, the guy who does
right,
the late night
world, talk. The world's
best is coming on, not like in weeks to come,
but right after the game.
Right after the game.
Yeah. John Harbaugh. Let's talk a little bit more about John Harbaugh. Stan, what did you make of the fact that the Ravens decided to announce his extension even before the season was over? They were playing the San Diego Chargers. They won that game.
It was a Saturday night.
Yeah. They went on to another game. They lost that one. But even before they could have potentially been knocked out of the playoffs, yet again, they announced that Harbaugh is there. What does that mean for the team and their strategy?
Well, Steve Bisciotti is a very loyal guy, and John Harbaugh is one of his people. And, you know, he admitted publicly that he contemplated firing him the previous year. And I think we all know when the Ravens were 4-5 this year that had John Harbaugh not made that late run and cemented a playoff spot this year, there was a fairly decent chance that they were going to part company. But the team did come on strong. And I found it a very odd timing, though. You're playing a Saturday night game in Los Angeles, and Friday night you come out with no quotes from the coach that he's accepting that, but just the team saying, hey, we're announcing that John Harbaugh is going to be back next year, and the team is working on a contract extension. And then on Monday, when we got a chance to talk to John Harbaugh after they won that game in San Diego, in Los Angeles, he said, no big story. And then on Tuesday, Peter King came out with a story that, well, not so fast. John Harbaugh may not want to be the coach beyond 2019.
It took him several weeks negotiate the deal, too. They just announced it for real just a few days ago.
And then all of a sudden, after they lose to the Chargers at home, John Harbaugh says, I have every intention of being back here if the team wants me, but I'm assuming they do want me. So I don't know what to have made of that other than it was very odd. The timing and the way they presented that.
So Stan and I have a great mutual friend, Mike Preston, the columnist for the Baltimore
Sun. Terrific
who
football
is,
writer.
You know, for my money,
he's a terrific football writer.
He is the authority on the Ravens. And a day, I think, before the announcement, before Steve Bisciotti's announcement, Mike Preston wrote a column saying, John Harbaugh's future in Baltimore is not assured at this point. So it makes you wonder about, you know, It's rare that a team makes a personnel decision based on a story in the newspaper. But in this case, because it was Mike and Mike's profile and credibility, I wonder whether that it was a response to Mike.
Is there any reason to believe that Mr. Harbaugh was shopping himself around to other teams? More money?
Well, interestingly, in January, the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel reported that Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, was very interested in John Harbaugh.
Even to the point of trading for him.
Trading for him. So
I didn't know they did that. Has there ever been a trade for a coach before?
Yes, it's been done a couple times.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, if he's under contract, then in order to make that deal, you would have to compensate the team in some way. But
there was talk that he was worth one or two first round picks from the Dolphins.
Yeah. Wow. Speaking of compensating teams, Joe Flacco will be perhaps issue number one for the new general manager, Eric DaCosta, who takes over from Ozzie Newsome as of now. There is a thing called dead money charge, right? So the Sun had a piece that said if the Ravens cut or trade Joe Flacco outright, they would incur a dead money charge of $16 million and save $8 million. Now, turns out I speak the English language. I know that there are, you know, subjects and predicates in that sentence, but I have no idea what it means. What does that mean? They would incur a dead money charge of $16 million and save $8
million. There's an acceleration if you have a contract. Now, as I understand it, Flacco's last year of his contract was not guaranteed, but it still has a cap value, and a certain amount of that, there's an acceleration when you try and get him off of your team that you incur for that. But I have to admit, Mark Hyman is also a lawyer. I asked David Modell early when the Ravens moved here, the late David Modell, I said, you got to explain to me the salary cap. You know, how it works, because we hadn't had football in 10, 12 years in Baltimore. He brought back the basic agreement, the collective bargaining agreement. And my head exploded reading the first one or two pages of that, and I never picked it up again. Mark could probably do a better job at explaining that.
For our purposes, I think the important thing to know is that every professional sports league has a different player compensation system. The NFL system is a hard salary cap. So each team is restricted with respect to the amount of money it can dedicate to salaries. So that's why you see players leaving team, you know, players who are contributors and still, you know, very good players leaving teams because there is that hard cap and the team can't exceed that compensation level. So the analysis we're talking about is how much money from Flacco's contract is going to count against that hard salary cap next year,
right?
Yeah.
So who would be interested in picking up Joe Flacco? Is Joe Flacco tradable? And if you trade him to somebody and he makes less money at the new place, then the Ravens have to make good to Mr. Flacco? Is that how that works?
Well, there are a couple of thoughts in there to pick out. Number one, NFL contracts are not guaranteed, as opposed to Major League Baseball contracts, for instance. So Chris Davis, you remember Chris Davis?
I still saw him Saturday at FanFest.
Okay.
The erstwhile home run king of the Baltimore Orioles.
He signed a 250-year contract for $20 million a year or whatever it was. That money is guaranteed. Whatever happens.
Whether he hits home runs or not.
Whether the Orioles decide that he would be better off, you know, not traveling with the team anymore. That money is guaranteed. The NFL model is very different. So the player is guaranteed the salary due to him that season. But even if a player signs a five-year contract, that just gives the team the option to exercise those out years. But the only year that's guaranteed is the year in which the player is currently in.
He makes $26.5 million a year.
I think he counts against the cap next year if he were still in the Ravens at $24.5 to $25 million.
Yeah. So, of course, if you're Mrs. Flacco, you're probably perfectly happy to see your husband not get hurt and sit on the sidelines during the games for that kind of money. She may be the only one.
Well, it's very interesting. You know,
I don't mean to put words in her mouth because she may also disagree with it.
But I had been told for a long time by somebody that knows Joe pretty well. I don't know Joe at all. That if he were let go by the Ravens, that was his intention to retire. But that has not seemed to be the case since this all came down the pike And I would maintain that the most interesting place for me, for Joe Flacco, is 35 miles south of here with the Washington Redskins. Their quarterback, Alex Smith, on the 33rd anniversary of Joe Theismann's horrific broken fibula, or is it the tibula or the fibula?
Both of them.
Yeah. That incredible hit from Lawrence Taylor. Alex Smith had the same horrific injury, and he's not going to play football again. They need a quarterback. It's convenient logistically for the Flacco family, I would imagine. But there are a couple other teams that might be very interested in him, namely the Miami Dolphins, namely the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah. There are always three or four NFL teams looking for an experienced starting quarterback. This is, I mean, Joe Flacco.
As long as his name is not Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
And the patina of Colin Kaepernick continues to hover over this game and this entire season. We have artists refusing to play at halftime in support of Mr. Kaepernick. He is suing the league for collusion. It is quite amazing that not one team has even given him a workout. I mean, they are not even thinking about hiring Colin Kaepernick. And as you say, there are a bunch of teams that need a quarterback with experience.
It's fascinating to watch. And, you know, I've thought for a long time, this is purely a business decision for NFL teams. They're doing the calculus. Yeah, we'll bring him in. Maybe he's better than what we have. But what will the consequences be for our sponsors, for our fans? And they're doing that analysis, and they're worried, they're concerned, they're afraid that it will be too disruptive to bring him in, which I think is a shame.
The most interesting spot that he could have landed was right here in Baltimore last year, and his girlfriend, who, as I understand it, is a radicalized Muslim, who maybe he is attempting to curry favor with his entire decision to take the knee or something like that. But that she sent out...
Well, I don't know what that means, Dan. Radicalized Muslim. What does that mean?
She sent out a meme of Steve Bisciotti with Ray Lewis sort of being in shackles, that somehow that black athletes are slaves to the white owners. And that ended all talk about Colin Kaepernick coming to Baltimore.
Yeah, the memes and Twitter is not the way that, you know, grown-ups have conversations, so I don't know anything about that. But before, we just got a couple of minutes here. Eric DaCosta, he's taken over from Ozzie Newsome. He has been with the organization since the very beginning of the Ravens. He's following a guy who's had a decent amount of success. What's the book on Eric DaCosta?
He's had a great mentor. I know that. I wouldn't expect a very, it would be a seamless transition, I would think.
I think it's going to be a seamless transition to an extent. I think that he is much more, in talking to him just at his press conference yesterday, he is much more a believer in analytics. I think you will see the Ravens dig into that world a great deal. I compare it, though, to when Phil Savage was Ozzie's assistant and George Kokainas followed Phil Savage. They both left to take the general manager's job in Cleveland, a place that was sort of, you talk about draining the swamp. They went into some dangerous waters there. Eric stayed where he knew who had his back and knew the players, and it's paid off for him.
One more comment before we go about the racial dynamic in the NFL. This season there were 8 coaches of color. That's tied for the most ever in the league. However, a bunch of them got fired, 5 of them. And thus far, 6 of the 7 coaches who've been hired by teams are white. So again, there is certainly, you know, there's this the proclamation by the NFL that they're working on racial diversity. More than 70% of the players are African American, and they say they're working on it, but you got to wonder how successful they
are. I think Roger Goodell at his press conference yesterday was much happier to talk about a blown call in the Saints game than about an issue like the one you're describing.
All right, well, gentlemen, enjoy the game. I appreciate you guys coming in. Thanks
for having us.
Stan the Fan Charles is the founder and publisher of PressBox. We've got a link to PressBox online on our website, wypr.org/midday. Mark Hyman is Midday's resident sports guru. He's a professor in the sports marketing program at George Washington University, and he's also the author of several books, including Concussions and Our Kids. Coming up after a quick break, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick has her weekly review. This week, it's Company at Baltimore's Still Point Theater. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station.